Welcome to Reader's Digest on VoiceCore. I'm your volunteer reader, Julie Milligan. For the next half hour, I'll read articles from the February-March 2026 issue of Reader's Digest. Starting with news from The World of Medicine by Molly Jasinski. Sweet dreams. The secret to better slumber could come down to what you eat. Or what you avoid, according to a new study in the journal Sleep Health. Researchers from Columbia University and the University of Chicago, after tracking participants' diet and sleep through journal notes and wrist devices, concluded that those who ate high amounts of fruits, vegetables, and complex carbohydrates like whole grains during the day were able to rest more peacefully that night. The food found to cause more disrupted sleep, meat, specifically red meat and processed meat. Put down your phone. A recent State Farm survey revealed that 80% of drivers admit to distracted driving, such as checking social media or reading or sending text messages. And 65% of drivers believe they can safely take their eyes off the road for 2 seconds or more. But the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration warns that just a few seconds of inattention could double the risk of an accident. Another caution, Harvard Medical School researchers discovered that people who brought their phones into the restroom were 46% more likely to have hemorrhoids. Oh, goodness. Take a stand. Here's a helpful new way to assess your overall health. Sit on the floor and see how easy it is to get up. Your ability to rise from the floor without any assistance could be a key indicator of your overall health and even your risk of death. In a study published in the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology, researchers from Brazil, Finland, and Stanford University in California observed more than 4,200 adults, ranging in age from 46 to 75, then assigned sitting rising test scores to participants based on how much support they needed to stand up from a seated position. Over a follow-up period, the people who'd been able to stand more easily without needing help or showing signs of unsteadiness were less likely to die early, with death rates up to 6 times lower than those who had struggled. From Laughter, the Best Medicine, a priest and a rabbi are eating their lunch at a restaurant when the priest starts to tease his old friend. This baked ham is delicious. So much better than your egg salad sandwich, says the priest. You really ought to try it. I know it's against your religion, but I can't understand why such a wonderful food should be forbidden. Tell me, rabbi, when are you going to break down and try it? The rabbi replies, at your wedding. From the Catholic Post. What did Jay-Z call his wife before they got married? Fiancé. When my girlfriend said she was leaving because of my obsession with the monkeys, I thought she was joking, and then I saw her face. I used to be in a band called Sold Out. Our gig posters looked great, but no one ever came. From BigTrainBlues.com. From National Interest, how not to waste 11,849 human organs. Everything has to go right for a life-saving transplant to happen. Too often, the system makes it impossible. By Dan Schwartz from Popular Mechanics. One Sunday, 66-year-old Brian Benedum's heart stops. It takes paramedics 25 minutes to get it beating again. He's unconscious, eyes closed, with a breathing tube taped to his mouth, By the time his older brother, David Benedum, reaches the emergency department at Mercy San Juan Medical Center in Carmichael, California. After speaking with the doctor, David understands that Brian, who had lived with Parkinson's disease for years, is gone. But doctors can be wrong, he thinks. By morning, however, an electroencephalogram reveals minimal electrical activity in Brian's brain. He isn't coming back. Brian had never wanted to talk about the end of his life and had no living will. But David, 74, wants for his brother what he wants for himself and his wife, Lisa Benedum, 69, if they were unresponsive and out of options in the cardiac ICU. He wants to help someone. So David lets go. His little brother, he decides, will donate his organs. In 2024, 24,020 people in the United States donated organs for transplantation. Their donations improved far more lives than that, because a single donor can provide multiple organs. And some organs, such as livers and kidneys, can be divided among recipients. Surgeons use these donations to replace a record number of more than 48,000 organs, including 847 pancreases, 3,404 lungs, 4,636 hearts, 11,458 livers, and 28,493 kidneys. Meanwhile, thousands of Americans have removed themselves from donor registries, largely after news reports characterized the organ donation system as no longer safe and effective. Experts call the reports misleading and say the industry is safe, but acknowledge that it has inherent flaws, including limitations the Benedum family will encounter as they wait for Brian to die. By some metrics, the organ donation and transplantation system in the U.S. does more transplants than that of any other country. Surgeons here perform 27% of all transplants worldwide, even though Americans represent less than 5% of the world's population. Yet, of the news Americans have heard about domestic organ donation in recent years, much has been bad news. Horrifying mistake to take organs from a living person was averted, witnesses say. Read an October 2024 headline on NPR.org. A year earlier, WABC-TV Eyewitness News reported, exclusive, New York agency gave bonuses to employees after meeting organ goal, emails show. And in December 2018, CNN reported that a heart was left behind on a Southwest Airlines flight. Anyone who read the full story would have found it more nuanced. The error was the airlines. The heart ultimately arrived in time. And it wasn't bound for transplant. It was to be harvested for its valves. Hyperbolic headlines are a small part of a more complex narrative, but they help sow doubt about a system that saves or improves thousands of lives a year. During the week following the NPR story, there was an increase in the number of people opting out from the National Donate Life Registry, with an average of 170 people removing themselves each day, 10 times more than the same week the year prior. You're listening to Reader's Digest on VoiceCorps. My name's Julie Milligan, and I'm continuing to read from the article, How not to waste 11,849 human organs. Back in 2020, the Senate Finance Committee sent a letter to the United Network for Organ Sharing, or UNOS, launching a congressional investigation into the U.S. supply chain. UNOS is the private nonprofit organization that manages the transplant system in the U.S. The letter covered a lot of ground. It asked about lapses in patient safety, inadequate oversight by the agencies, and tens of thousands of organs that it claimed were going unrecovered or untransplanted. The lawmakers ran with the sensational version of the CNN story, "A Heart Was Left on a Plane." In 2022, the committee released a batch of findings from its investigation, unearthing more horror stories, including claims of testing mistakes that had killed some transplant patients and oversight failures that had endangered others. Beyond the damage to registry numbers, the problem with the prevailing narrative that the supply chain is inept, corrupt, and dangerous is that it diverts attention from what may be the most consequential problem with organ donation and transplantation in this country. It's just that that story, a tech story involving a faulty algorithm, is less sensational. Brian Benedum has been on a breathing tube for nearly 3 days. The medical staff have told David that Brian must remain alive to preserve his organs while they look for patients who can receive them. But it's weighing on David and Lisa. They're still looking? Inside a small conference room nearby, Linda Freeman opens her laptop and downloads Brian's medical chart. Freeman works for Sierra Donor Services, one of 56 organ procurement organizations, or OPOs, around the country that identify, obtain, and often transport organs to transplant centers. She begins to upload the chart to DonorNet, a national database where potential organs are matched with possible patients. Then she waits. The medical chart is slow to load. Brian is eligible to donate his liver, lungs, and kidneys, but it's complicated. He's older, and in addition to Parkinson's disease, has diabetes. Suddenly, the laptop populates three lists for his liver, his lungs, and his kidneys. Freeman is looking at 5,077 possible matches. So now, she says, scrolling through the lung list, the hunt for the home begins. Her job was once simpler. The supply chain used to follow a hub-and-spoke distribution model, similar to how FedEx operates. Packages first go to regional hubs, which send them to local hubs, which then distribute them to area customers. In the organ donation and transplantation supply chain, OPOs like the one Freeman works for would serve as a hub, and the transplant centers in its territory were its customers, who got first dibs on organs before they were offered nationally. Volumes were manageable under this model. Many transplant surgeons received around 4 kidney offers a day. Then in 2017, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services was sued. The plaintiff, a young woman in New York with a fatal lung disease, argued that the supply chain was unfair. Just across the Hudson River in New Jersey, she would have received a transplant more quickly. But the donor lungs there were primarily for patients in that region, the lawsuit said. Fearing an unfavorable ruling, the federal government preempted the judge and told the officials who run the supply chain to design a replacement. What they came up with, ultimately for all organs, was intended to make the supply chain more equitable. But in trying to solve one problem, it may have exacerbated others. Picture a map of the country. Picture across that map all the hospitals where organs are recovered. Now draw a circle around each hospital. Because of the reforms driven by litigation, every transplant center within a circle now receives offers from the hospital at the center of the circle, which may sound like the FedEx model, except now the circles overlap. It's as if your local FedEx hub is sending you packages, and suddenly all these new hubs you didn't know about were also now sending you packages. After a week, you can't get out your front door. This is essentially what's happening to transplant centers with organ offers. They are fielding more calls and more texts about organs from more donors at more hospitals. A typical transplant coordinator, who filters much of this chaos before it reaches the surgeon, is now spending 91 hours a month evaluating kidney offers, nearly twice the time as before, one study found, and the related workload for surgeons has also increased. "I can tell you it's brutal," says Seth Karp, MD, surgeon-in-chief at Vanderbilt University Medical Center in Nashville, Tennessee. "When I'm on liver call now, I'm getting calls throughout the night. I used to wake up a couple times a night, and now my wife sleeps in a different bedroom." Despite this crushing volume, the center isn't doing any additional transplants because of the new allocation system. "We're just having to manage all this complexity," Dr. Karp says. Doctors want to match patients with organs that will maximize their life expectancy. So for high-priority patients, generally those who've been waiting the longest, they tend to hold out for organs from young, healthy donors and reject offers from patients like Brian Benedum, which they politely call clinically complex. Clinically complex doesn't mean bad. It just means complex. A kidney damage from diabetes, for example, often recovers in a new body, but sometimes it does not. A kidney scarred during its journey outside the body could heal with healthy tissue, or it could heal with more scar tissue. "This is where medicine becomes slightly an art," says Sumit Mohan, MD, a nephrologist and professor of epidemiology at Columbia University in New York City. "Clinicians still need to manage the uncertainty of complex organ offers," he says, "and that slows down the process. When centers can manage the uncertainty, a clinically complex organ can revitalize a patient. But often the centers can't or won't, and those organ offers tumble through the algorithm." In 2024, New England Donor Services, one of the nation's largest OPOs by donor volume, had 369 kidneys declined by transport centers. They offered each kidney an average of 7,681 times. The consequences are discouraging. In one study of more than 250,000 patients awaiting a kidney transplant, 9.3% of those for whom the centers declined an offer died before they got another offer. As of November 2025, 108,385 people were waiting for a transplant, and every day, 13 on the wait list die. In 2024, the supply chain failed to use 11,849 organs procured for transplantation. For these organs, doctors also have a euphemism: discards. It's been 2 hours and 19 minutes since Freeman initiated the match run on DonorNet, and surgeons have turned down all 35 of Brian Benedum's lung offers. By evening, surgeons for every one of the 3,874 patients matched to his kidneys will have declined those too. But Freeman still has hope for his liver, even though it's already been turned down 421 times. The algorithm now has it before the Mayo Clinic in Arizona, which she says is a good sign. The transplant center there does more liver transplants than any other center in the country, and it often takes clinically complex ones like Brian's. Plus, Freeman says, DonorNet is listing 40 possible patients there. You're listening to Reader's Digest on VoiceCorps. My name's Julie Milligan, and I'm continuing to read from the article, How Not to Waste 11,849 Human Organs. Still, she's beginning to feel pressure. She wants to tell Brian's family when they can expect a time of death. She picks up her phone, dials Arizona, and tells them that any patient of theirs who needs a liver can have this one. Now we wait, she says. 38 minutes pass. Freeman calls Arizona again. The center is still reviewing the offer with the surgeon. They'll call back in a few minutes. 23 minutes goes by. I'm giving them grace, Freeman says, but at the same time, I need to find a home for this liver. 3 minutes pass. Come on, Arizona, Freeman says. She worries the woman she spoke with will get busy and forget to call her back. She texts the Mayo Clinic seeking updates. She's now thinking they'll need to schedule time soon in the operating room if Arizona says yes to Brian's liver. Her phone rings. Sierra Donor, Freeman says. She scrunches her face in confusion. Sierra Donor, she repeats. Then she hangs up. Spam. Before the United States adopted its system for organ donation and transplantation, there was hardly a system at all, which made the news in 1983. That summer, an 11-month-old girl from Texas went into liver failure, and President Ronald Reagan, who learned of the girl's plight from a member of Congress, took to the radio to plead for a donor. He said an Air Force jet was on standby and recited the phone number for an organ bank in Houston. If people needed a transplant in those days, their best bet may have been to make an appeal in the newspaper and hope someone of stature noticed. But even the president couldn't help the little girl in Texas, who died a few months later. In 1984, Congress passed the National Organ Transplant Act, which created a national registry for organ matching that would soon be run by UNOS under federal contract. Today, surgeons are performing more transplants year over year thanks to the efforts of employees like Freeman. But because of ongoing issues, including the revised algorithm, they are also discarding more organs. Figures compiled by the Organ Procurement and Transplantation Network, or OPTN, which oversees UNOS, show an overall growth in annual discards since the group began recording the data in 1988. UNOS has made myriad changes to the matching algorithm since then, and the most recent, Mohan says, has made it dramatically less efficient. It's difficult even for UNOS to assess the impact of its change, according to a 2021 report from the United States Digital Services, or USDS, an agency focused on improving technology used by the federal government. The report argued that the underlying code is fragile and likely at an unmanageable level of complexity. In its investigation, USDS asked whether UNOS had measured the complexity of its code base, and UNOS said it saw no significant value in this analysis. The fact that they have not done even this cursory analysis, USDS said in its report, indicates that they likely never seriously considered moving from their current tech stack, nor do they have any plan to rewrite their code in the future. 22 minutes after the spam call, Freeman dials Arizona. The call gets forwarded, but soon someone calls back. It'll probably be at least another half hour before the surgeon decides, but he's interested. There it is. Given the Arizona clinic's history of aggressive placement, and given that it has 40 patients awaiting a liver, Freeman hangs up, feeling optimistic. She turns to a coworker and says, "Get me an OR." The next day, down the hall from the OR, Lisa and David Benedum sit next to Brian, preparing to say goodbye. A nurse administers a blood thinner to prevent Brian's blood from clotting and damaging his liver before it can be recovered. The nurse asks David and Lisa if they'd like to leave, but David says they'd prefer to stay. And so the nurse begins pulling the breathing tube slowly from Brian's trachea. It makes a sound like water rushing down a drain. Then the room is quiet. Brian, after nearly 70 hours of life support, is untethered. In a room next door, Freeman stands at her laptop and stares at a wall monitor that displays Brian's vitals. They had been stable, but are beginning to swing. Freeman is transmitting the data to the OR, which is on standby. A surgeon from the Arizona Mayo Clinic flew in about an hour earlier, and his stainless steel instruments, scissors, scalpel, forceps, are laid out on blue cloth. There's a 60-minute window during which Brian must die for his liver, now oxygen-deprived, to be eligible for donation. We will continue this story in the next installment of A Reading from Reader's Digest. Thank you for listening to Reader's Digest. Stay tuned for more programming on VoiceCorps, your audio access to the world.